Welcome to the CG Pro podcast. This is episode 60, and today we have a very special guest, Caitlin Yang, who is a visual effects supervisor, CEO of Alpha Studios, and has an amazing career spanning years of great experience in the visual effects industry and starting various ventures, companies, and initiatives. And great pleasure to have you here today, Caitlin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the platform. Glad to be here.
You bet. So, and welcome to all our listeners as well. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you being here. Feel free to ask questions into the chat wherever you're joining this from. If you do, we should be able to ask them as we go. So please feel free to do that. And if you enjoy today, you can follow us at becomecgpro.com to find out more about what we do as a school, or follow us in our free Facebook group. But yeah, Caitlin, great to have you here today. Real pleasure, and been looking forward to this a lot.
Yeah, I must say, I was checking out some of the previous episodes on Spotify as well. And, I think Become CG Pro has, kind of elevated itself to be, the spot for kind of these informal conversations for you to learn more about, all those who lead projects, in creating visuals that are probably in our kind of, repertoire already. And I was thoroughly enjoying, listening to quite a few episodes. So really glad to be here.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for listening as well. And great to have you on the other side of the screen. So, I would love to start off just asking a little bit about you and about how you got started. I know you've worked your way up from an internship all the way up from NPC, I think, all the way up to running a studio and being a visual effects supervisor at kind of the peak of being a visual effects artist. So at the beginning of the journey, were there any kind of early inspirations for you, any movies that like you might have seen that made me think, that's what I want to do, or any like influences early on?
Yeah, absolutely. Looking back at my life, right? And I was just so kind of not aware of all the pieces falling into place. But quite a few key moments happened when I was 9 years old. The big one kind of being immigrating to the United States from China. And that was largely in part, for me to get a proper diagnosis for my condition, spinal muscular atrophy. And the United States then, I think, now as well, right, kind of just offers a greater acceptance and flexibility of crafting a life, with a disability than any other country, right, especially China. And so, my parents definitely made the big sacrifice, instead of climbing the ladders to their own careers, in their field of medicine, they chose to kind of give me a greater flexibility for me to get an education and live out my life. And so at 9 years old, I immigrated to the Midwest. And for, to kind of please my parents in a way, they wanted me to pick up the language. And at first, I remember they got me all these books with note cards, and I was like, I'm 9 years old. I'm not going to do any of that. And so our other compromise became getting my own Blockbuster card. I think I still have that card somewhere. Where, I rented a movie a day. I think I rented a movie a day for maybe 5 years. And one of the first movies I became obsessed, right, was Star Wars, Phantom Menace. Mainly because that one was flying off the shelves faster than any other movies. And being a kid, right, you're kind of just living off of the busyness of the schedule. I was able to pop in at like 3 p.m. and, get the movies before, kind of the late night, kind of rush and kind of getting first dibs on all the good ones. And I just remember being mesmerized by the pod racing sequence. And for a 9 year old, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And also, right, in the 9 year old logic, I just became, kind of very curious at how they got everyone in outer space to film the thing.
Right. Yeah.
All right. And, kind of back in the day, too, right? For Blockbuster days, for those who remember, the disc 2 was, kind of the highly coveted, it's extended materials, how they put everything together behind the scenes, interviews, all that. And I just became fascinated at the disc three, the making of, right, for Return of the Jedi. And I just kind of became fascinated at looking at all the departments listed, and especially the visual effects department and kind of all the nuance and the intricacies, right? I remember someone was talking about rotoscoping all the leaves in the jungles, right, to kind of place all the characters in there and nestle them in nicely. And I think I probably watched the behind the scenes, clips more than the actual movies themselves. And I think that, you know, definitely became the building blocks of what I wanted to do with my life. And I, you know, always remembered seeing in the credits, right, John Knoll, visual effects supervisor. And I didn't know what any of those were meant at the time. I think that, you know, definitely inspired me to go to the library a bunch of times, checking out, you know, anything and everything that I could at the time. I remember reading a bunch on, you know, filming the fantastic and filming miniatures, right, and rear projection and matte painting. And in a way, you know, that definitely shaped, right, the most fundamental years of my life. And so when I was looking at colleges, I just knew that I really wanted to go into this field. And, you know, it took quite some convincing, right, with my doctor parents for me to pursue something very creative and free flowing. And, you know, so I was able to major in animation at USC Film School. I'm still an animation nerd at heart, right? I did a minor in computer science. And then, you know, during the time at university, I started interning as soon as I could, right? The very glamorous jobs of filling up the fridge, right? Getting all the brands of sparkling water, memorizing everyone's Starbucks orders. I gotta say, when Starbucks came out with an app, I was like, are you kidding me? This would have been so much easier back in the day. And I think, you know, the first kind of artist internship I had was through the Television Academy. I was working under Mark Spatney, who is still a good friend and ally and supporter to this day. And we worked on season one of The Walking Dead. And it was really a very surreal full circle, right? I did some very minor work on the key art poster itself, and somehow that key art poster kind of became the meme of the pandemic when we started in 2020. And I haven't seen that, right, in over, you know, kind of 10, 12 years. So that was a bit of a surreal flashback as well. And you know, I've had so many great opportunities, you know, to kind of contribute visual effects, you know, and digital art in a lot of the series that I used to, you know, just be an audience member and be really a fan. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, taking us to present day.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah, very similar for me. It was Jurassic Park, but like seeing the movie and then buying the book and trying to figure out how to put that together. I was like about 14, 15, I think, when that happened. So going from the 9-year-old, gave me inspiration to the USC, were there certain choices you made, like subjects that you focused on, things that you did in between?
I think, you know, we're all kind of made up of different amounts of things, right, for different people. I, you know, this might be surprising to folks, but I was never really the astute student. I think I kind of had to be just to please my parents, so they'll leave me alone and let me do my thing. But I've always just enjoyed doing deep dives in certain things, right? I remember for a period of time, I was really into the black hole. I don't know why, but that was just something that I could just, you know, kind of source a lot of different materials, try to find the common denominators, try to find the outliers, right? And try to imagine something in my own mind. And I think that's still my preferred way of, you know, keep educating myself. And I think that's the, you know, one of the many beauties of visual effects is we get to do these deep dives on the most random things,
right? Yeah.
Every project, it's a deep dive of something else. And I think that's, you know, what's kind of keep, you know, my curiosity, you know, kind of hungry, if you will. And so I think from, you know, being a kid and, you know, figuring out, you know, some sort of a college, you know, education, art was really my main focus. And I've always just been fascinated at how you can visually show something that perhaps only, you know, you see in your mind, or you're able to kind of, you know, sketch out to a certain degree. I remember taking a digital art class, which was the first of its kind to be offered in my school district. I went to a public school. And I remember, you know, us learning the word composition, right? And everyone kind of had to write their own definition of composition. And I think to me, composition is really a lot of different decisions, figuring out how you can fill up a frame. But, you know, during that time, you know, kind of in my one movie a day, right, what I put the two and two together is everything you see on the silver screen is really all the art forms combined, right? With the dialogue and the acting and the music and the sound effects and everything. And, you know, back in the day, we, you know, didn't go to the cinema a lot because it was, you know, kind of a costly item. So every time we did, it was quite a treat. And so I just did every other art form that I could, hoping that one of them would end up, you know, on the silver screen one day. And so that, you know, started with a lot of fine arts, a lot of figure drawing, which I definitely got, you know, my butt handed to me every time we, you know, kind of go around the classroom to critique. I'm like, yeah, I'm not ranking. But I think just kind of thinking about anatomy in that way definitely made my animation education a lot easier to absorb, right? Of, you know, how you can convey certain emotions with certain poses and the transition, you know, between the two. Something I still use to this day is kind of color theory, right? We had a class where at, you know, the first 15 minutes of every class, you get your paint sample and you just have to match that color. And I think now I can kind of, you know, do it intuitively, but, you know, at the start, you're like, oh, what is in this purple that's kind of making it a little bit of blue? What do you add, right? So there's so much groundwork that I've, you know, gained from fine arts that I still use to this day. Line weights, for example, I'm just looking at our background. It's like, oh, we have three different line weights that make up, you know, the geometric shape, you know, that's kind of in our background. And that gives a little bit of a visual interest. You know, if they were all, you know, the same way, it probably wouldn't, you know, kind of be, you know, this interesting to look at and so forth. So yeah, I think I've always,
thank you. I make the background myself. So
there you go. There you go. Right. Were you thinking of line weights? When you
design. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I think there's no one way of, you know, getting into the field of animation or visual effects, but I think at the end of it, we all have a fascination of storytelling, and in a way, like how to mimic our world of things that currently exist, and how we can, you know, keep augmenting that, right? Kind of for the fantastical, or kind of just, you know, to kind of mix and match something that doesn't, you know, really exist on its own.
Cool. Yeah. You've been through learning what you're talking about here, was learning the fundamentals and learning them. I just to echo a thing that you mentioned as well. I love, one of the things I love about computer graphics visual effects is, as you said, you have to learn about the world. You have to suddenly study the world and how things are made, how an engine works, how a hummingbird's wing is constructed, how all these things actually function, so that you can then reproduce it back again in computer graphics. That's a real, I think, is a real gift of doing this for a living, is you get to learn, being curious. It's very, very satisfying. When when talking about your path to learning, how do you feel about now that we're in this digital age and been in it for a while, and certain things that you probably went through that people don't necessarily get pushed through anymore because of the advent of all these digital tools. What do you think about, what would you recommend to somebody, say they're not being pushed through those things these days? Would you recommend that somebody does go back and do all of those things, figure drawing and some of those fundamentals?
I think if that's an area that captures your interest, right? I don't think there's one particular medium that's, you know, outweighs one versus the other in terms of self-expression. Right, for a certain amount of time, I was really fascinated at macro photography, right, and figure out how that worked. And I think this was a spinning off of a going down the rabbit hole of studying the texture of a hamster's tongue for a commercial. I think this was also back to back with another Super Bowl commercial with the latest Toyota. So then we had to figure out how is this engine different from the other engine, and if we can, if it's close enough, if we can match that, or, you know, it was different enough that it has to be a custom thing. But I think it's really about putting in 10,000 hours in whichever, you know, category that makes your heart sing. And it's okay to jump around. I think the more niche areas of expertise that you can provide, the more useful it is, really. Right? I think, you know, we were consulting, like one in four was consulting a commercial one day, and one of the notes, I was like, wow, you guys really paid attention, because every time you see a wheelchair on screen, it is brand spanking new. And my chair look like it has been through a few things, right? every time I take you to the service job, they're like, where have you been? It's like, that's a long story, right? So I think it's just paying all the attention to details and practicing in a way that you can be more comfortable in whatever medium to express yourself, right? You know, nowadays, right, I find it really satisfying to watch someone else's behind the scenes, right, that I don't have to kind of put together, but I can listen on how, you know, where they are formulating the dots that eventually led to this idea. I love, you know, listening to podcasts, right? Going on a hike, or, you know, kind of going to the gym and really gaining others' perspectives. I think during the pandemic, one of the most, you know, invaluable things I was able to really put in the time and do the work, right, is talk therapy, of figuring out, you know, what hurt points I was still carrying on from years of, you know, kind of repetitive experiences and negative thought patterns, right? And kind of just all the injustice in the world, but how can I turn that around so I'm not always carrying something so negative and heavy? Like, how can you make light of that? How can you make that, you know, humorous? And how can you expand that into more empathy so you can see the difference in others and not criticize right away, but really understand the root issue of, you know, kind of where they're coming from, which, you know, in my days of visual effects, especially in the early days, there was a lot of yelling. I think now it's a little bit of curbed, but I think that, you know, was always such a sensitive spot for me. But now it's like, oh, right, what are they going through that this is their self-expression, right, at 9 a.m., you know, like, what is, you know, I kind of really see the humanity, you know, in all of that. I think, you know, going back to the silver screen, everything that we're exporting is really just an emotion, right? And those that we see on screen, hopefully those that are listed on the credits, is really what's culturally acceptable. And as we elevate and expand the definition of that, right, we are really all visually crafting an emotion, and hopefully you'll kind of get through on the other end, the end user, the experience, you know, on the audience member, however it is, they'll get to feel something, if not the exact thing, something adjacent, right? Something similar to that. Right. What was the last thing I saw? I just watched, you know, like so many people, I watched Oppenheimer, right? And there were certain scenes that, you know, definitely evoked certain emotions. And it's still to this day, it's a treat for me to experience that in a group setting, in a theater, right? And that, right, you know, and for every movie, that's, you know, just quite special. And you're really giving that time in the dark room, right, to practice putting yourself in the shoes of someone else, and see how they will think and see how they will act, and really, you know, kind of see how all that plays out. And I think it's a beautiful shared human experience.
Wow. What a great answer to that question. That was really, I loved how you brought it back to what inspires you, what speaks to you, because it's different for all of us, and not thinking about what skills maybe you should pick up, because those are the ones you're supposed to know, but which ones are calling you forwards. And then that essentially ending up in the audience's hearts, where you are trying to create a feeling, you're trying to create an emotion for people to be able to experience, and the genuineness of the through line there. I loved how you explained it going all the way through from what inspires you as an artist, how it ends up then inspiring somebody who's watching something you make at the end. I think that's really, really cool to see it that way.
Yeah, this is, you know, definitely a guilty pleasure, but whenever I want to turn my mind off, I do love watching the Food Network. But I think the thing that I always take away is, you know, all the ways that, you know, all the chefs add texture in food. Mm. But what does that texture translate to in Maya, in Unreal, right? In the camera moves, in the transitions. And there's such a beauty in, you know, the order of operations. So you have to make this before you make this and you add this, right? And so that's a very kind of unlikely area, you know, that I try to kind of just let my mind rest and just absorb what I see. But I think, you know, in the background is constantly figuring out, like, you know, color, texture, composition, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I actually have the same love there. We've watched a lot of Gordon Ramsay cooking shows and a lot of cooking shows in general, because I think they appeal to us in the same way. And you're watching somebody else's art form there. Basically, that's something that you don't necessarily know all the nuances of it, but you get the appreciation of mastery, the appreciation of creating some exquisite thing at the end of it, and the processes that it takes to do that, and the care that it takes to do that. The you're not just making something because someone is hungry. You're making something that's inspiring. A meal can do the same thing. It can create feeling and emotion. And in a lot of those shows, you'll notice they talk about story. They talk about what do you have to say, or the story that you're telling with this plate. Like, it's an art form. It's trying to create an emotion.
It's so intentional, right? Just watching masters being masterful at their craft.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful to see. Even if you don't really, if you're not familiar with the medium, you can appreciate the care that another human takes. And I also liked what you were saying about the cinema, the theater experience, because I think that's something that's been a lot of concern over, really, in the industry, or and seeing change happen through formats. You mentioned Blockbuster along the way there, you know, with all these really major format twists and turns, although theater is still there and has been there since the beginning and is still there and seems to still have demand, and drawing the restaurant analogy. I remember reading something recently from, I think it was Elon Musk's talking about his kid asking the question, why do people go to restaurants? And I think the kid figured it out in the end and said they worked out that they like going to restaurants because they want to eat with strangers. And it was such an interesting response, because, like, they were saying, well, you can eat at home, you can have delivery, you can get all the same food you can get in a restaurant at home. Why do you go out and do it in that room? Like, now we have huge TVs and projectors at home and big sound systems, but maybe it's the same thing. Maybe we just like being around other people. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's all about a changing in atmosphere and changing your environment. Your mood definitely brings a different kind of, you know, it elicits a different emotion out of you. I thought of this right away. So on my latest series, American Born Chinese, we had one episode. It's, you know, it was essentially the Met Ball in heaven. And our production designers, Michelle Yu and Cindy Chow, they knocked it out of the park. It was as eloquent as it was over the top, right? As it was kind of true to the, you know, the Chinese kind of landscape and all the scenes we've seen in Journey to the West. And for a little over a week, we were all essentially in the same banquet hall, right? Kind of with our coats on, because we were shooting with dry ice and you have to have the room really cold for the ice to kind of stay at ground level. And I was in a different headspace in that particular banquet hall than I was, right, on all of the Fox lot, just because of the color combinations and, right, and the visuals and everything else that I was taking in. It's right. I think that's the power of different environments. And I don't think you're able to get that at home. Right. I think it also, right, kind of like what you're saying, you do need the audience participation, right, of others, of kind of adding to this similar shared experience. I think it just resonates a little deeper when you laugh at the same lines, right? Where you're scared at the same jump cuts, whatever it is. It's not something to be experienced in isolation if you can help it.
Right. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. It's a connecting experience going through something like that together, maybe like a meal, maybe like why do we even eat together? Why don't we just eat on our own? No, it's if we have craved that human connection. Yeah, that's really, really cool to hear. I'd love to hear more about that. Must have been a personal experience for you as well. That subject is clearly something which you're familiar with. I'm sure you resonate with a lot.
Yeah, I think it was the first time that I didn't have to start my research on the source material, mainly because I binged it as a kid. That was the last series I remember prior to immigrating to the United States. Right, that was my afternoon special. And I knew the time that it would get on, and I had to get home right before it started. This is before, you know, the days of, you know, DVR and streaming and all that. And so, you know, what I try to explain to people is so much of the American language and storytelling in many ways is based off the works of Shakespeare. Right. And so much of the kind of Chinese way of storytelling is based on the Monkey King. And like never in my wildest dreams, you know, would I think that I will be part of the team to make a modern rendition of that, right? 30 something years later on another continent. And yeah, so it was quite special, you know, to work on American born Chinese and with so many, right? So many amazing cast and crew. I think just with our cast, it was right in a way, a repeat of Everything Everywhere All at Once. Right when it was kind of, you know, the cultural phenomenon that that it was, and just seeing everyone in a complete different look, right? Complete different, you know, sets and costumes and you know, kind of the way that, you know, they interacted with each other. It was such a treat.
I can imagine. How much did that influence the way that you worked on it, and were you able to draw from a lot of your own experiences and feed that into your work?
So, you know, as far as I know, this is the only kind of modern interpretation of the Monkey King story, which is, you know, legendary in the East. And right, I think this is the first time we're seeing, you know, a beloved character going through everyday issues like, how long do you ground your kid for, right? And do you go look for him if he runs away from your house? And right, how do you deal with, you know, kind of inner conflicts, especially, you know, during the growing pains of your high school years? And so I, you know, kind of, I was very fortunate to work with such an amazing group of people who kind of all came with ideas that was really conducive to, you know, kind of starting out as a jumping off point of kind of creating visuals that was really just in service of the story, right? This is not, you know, a visual effects heavy show, you know, although, you know, we definitely had a ton of visual effects elements to it. But I think it's really redefining the characters in a way that, you know, allowed us to use visual effects to show their kind of multifaceted, you know, lives and also different worlds as well. We do, you know, kind of jump back and forth, you know, through heaven, through modern day, and, you know, just try to figure out a visual language that fit this kind of modern take, right, of, you know, of a beloved story.
So do you feel like fantasy or like fantastical way storytelling is a good way of being able to get through to more maybe challenging issues in modern times?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just going back to my own right high school days, I, you know, definitely had my own share of growing pains and right fighting with friends, with family. And I think the shows that I was kind of gravitate towards all had that element of, you know, magical surrealism underneath it, right? The shows I'm thinking of, I used to come home to Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, and Charmed, and how cool would it be for you to flick your wrist and have something appear in your hands, or, you know, if you think of a spot for you to teleport there, you know, with all the lights surrounding you, right? And kind of everything else. And I think it's just, it just really a fun take on your imagination for you to think of something and for it to happen, right? And magical surrealism is just kind of like that in real time. And also I think in American Born, and with so many projects that I do try to think about light first and foremost. I know just there's many entry points, right, to visual effects and composition and all that, but I always thinking about light and what the light source could be, and that could that, you know, emanate from a prop, and if it is, right, can I let the prop department know and pick their brains and see whether, you know, things are coming from, if it's kind of otherworldly, right, like what other designs in our environment or in the lighting setup, right, or even our lens choice, can we really, you know, mix and match to elevate something like that, so it's just not something that felt overlaid and it kind of appeared, you know, out of nowhere. There's really a source to it that's based somewhat in, you know, something that could exist in the real world. And so a lot of my research, you know, for American Born was down that rabbit hole, right, of what things could emulate light in such a way, right? Maybe when, you know, you do hand-to-hand combat, right, which we had so many just mesmerizing stunts, right? Thanks to our amazing stunts coordinator, Ping Chong. And, you know, those are just kind of his own art form as well, right? For you to kind of throw two people around the room, and when they hit something else happens, and you're just kind of all, you know, in the camera move in the moment of it, try to figure out what moments, you know, could benefit from a little spark or from a little thing falling just a few frames beforehand, you know, all that. Again, try to ground the magical realism to reality, you know, as much as possible. But that, you know, at a certain point, you do kind of have a little bit of leeway just to kind of, you know, make it light and make it fun.
Amazing. What inspired you to want to become a visual effects supervisor, over progressing through being, I know that you came up through compositing mainly, I think, and then becoming a visual effects supervisor. How did that come about?
I think it kind of came about this natural progression of figuring out, right, the next rung on the ladder of my career as a compositor. And I've watched so many people before me, you know, kind of take the plunge and move to different parts of the world to keep up with, right, the studio closing down and then the studio popping up and then going 6 months here and then 3 months here and then doing a second unit here. And I think just having immigrated at such a young age and not really having a home base, I do like having, you know, Los Angeles as my home base. And I, you know, kind of like a certain type of routine and, you know, the friends that I see and the places I go. And around the time that I was kind of in my senior compositor role at a company that I really respected and I loved and I wanted to work at since a kid, I was offered an amazing role, but it was going to be in a completely different country. And I, at the time, I think just personally, I wasn't ready to uproot, right, so quickly and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of put down roots elsewhere. And so I, you know, took that as a sign to make the ultimate leap and start my own, you know, visual effects company, Alpha Studios. I think I did this when I was 25. Because I think, wow. I think the age factor helped, because I think I had to be that young to do something so reckless.
Right.
Right. But when I'm in, I'm all in. Right. And so that led me to, you know, learn way more about the business, you know, the business end of our industry. Right. And how to, you know, build relationships, how to build clients. Right. How to kind of set up a studio. I was very grateful for my time at COSA VFX mm-hmm. and especially Chris Lance. Right. Because I saw them do it at the ground up. I think I was one of the first few compositors they hired that was apart from the founders. And so that planted my seed right years before I started Alpha Studios. And I also wanted somewhere where I was free to comment on the state of the industry. I think especially in terms of diversity, or, you know, the lack thereof, and having my own, you know, kind of studio, my own platform, it just kind of felt like the next, you know, kind of best thing to try to, you know, to try to kind of, you know, gain some sort of, you know, like fill out the playing field, and for me to build my platform that way. And yeah, we just recently celebrated our 10th birthday. So we're officially two handfuls. So I'm very grateful to keep, you know, to be doing visual effects, you know, at Alpha Studios for 10 years, hopefully 10 more years.
Amazing. Well, congratulations and happy birthday. That's very cool. Yeah, 10 years in business is no small thing. It's very hard to do running a business of any sort, and the visual effects business too, and going through some of the changes in the last 10 years as well. And I'd love to ask a little bit. We have one question that came in that maybe relates there a little bit. And I can maybe just kind of read it out and see what you think. Someone's asking, what do you think about the studios pulling the rug on the home team and sending the work offshore, no union? What do we do in LA?
That has been, you know, an ongoing question, I think, since I started in the industry as an intern. I don't think it will ever become 100%, right? Because I think there is a visual language that especially those who are directing up top, right? The showrunners, the directors, the producers, the, you know, visual effects supervisors, and, you know, all the team. I don't think you're able to get a similar look and feel if you were to go 100%, you know, offshore, right? 100%, you know, to places, right? Like my birth country, China. When I was looking at some of their effects, my first thought was, this was not how I would composite the frame, even though it's different and it's unique. It's a different thought process than I think what we're used to kind of in the Western kind of storytelling front. But, you know, having said that, you know, being on the team of making decisions of, right, this is the lump sum of money we have for this show. These are the best ways you can stretch it to make sure that all the sequences are covered, right? Making sure that you have enough, you know, for your most crucial sequences and so forth. It's a tug, right? It's a push and pull, because there are, you know, countries where the cost of living is just way cheaper than your Los Angeles, New York, you know, Chicago, Montreal, Vancouver. And I think for the route of keep climbing, you know, the career ladder, if you had a certain company, I think at a certain point you do feel compelled, right? Oh, if I do go to, you know, right, another branch, right, could I get a title bump? Could I get a salary bump? However it is. And these decisions are very personal. But I think for, you know, especially the education track, whether it's at the university setting or at a technical school, all the ones that I've known of and I had the pleasure of speaking with, and all the ones I know my colleagues have, you know, gained their educational training and, you know, kind of, you know, were able to play in that sandbox. The majority of those are kind of still, you know, located in the United States. And I think if we are looking towards those schools to become a talent pool for us to source, right, the next gen, right, and just keep adding to our field, I don't think it's something that we can, you know, redirect our focus and go to another continent right away. But it's a delicate balance, and I don't know if I have all the answers, right, of saying one is right or it's wrong. I don't think anyone kind of really knows that, but it is heartbreaking for me to see so many of my colleagues having to uproot every year, right, from LA to elsewhere and back and forth and back and forth. And I do hope that there are, you know, laws and unions put in place so we can keep doing that without having to change our entire world and atmosphere every few years, just so we can, you know, keep being at play in our current industry.
Good. Yeah. Good points there. How have you seen the essentially post-COVID remote workforce help with that or change that, or what's it like at the moment? I know at the moment too, there's other challenges due to the strikes.
Yeah, at the moment, I think I speak to everyone. You know, I think the crew especially, right? Where most of us are in the red and we're dying to go back to work and keep, you know, honing our craft and keep putting in the next 10,000 hours, whatever it is, you know. But I do stand with SAG-AFTRA and right, all the ways that they are securing a fair contract. I think especially for likeliness of, you know, of actors, you know, digital humans, it's already here. And I think there needs to be, you know, kind of best practices, you know, rules and standards before we go any further down this train track. I think for remote work, in a way, visual effects, I think, has always kind of had the benefit of, you know, doing, you know, remote work. I know on the, you know, client side and, you know, vendor side as well, you know, being a visual effects supervisor, I do have the flexibility of, you know, going somewhere and just open my laptop and then put in 5 or 6 hours, right? Maybe then go outside and, you know, look at some trees and give my eyes a break and then, you know, going to another place and, you know, open the laptop and do some more works there. And, you know, I know for a lot of artists, right, they kind of prefer having their boxed, you know, base in a home office or whatever. And this, you know, previously I was at a studio, but I think just in terms of the sheer number, we essentially went work from home overnight, right? And yep. This request, I think before the pandemic, it was maybe allowed in very special circumstances. I had to go up the chain and kind of ask. And then right overnight, it just became an industry standard. And so I think that also adds to the complexity, right, of your previous question. What happens if you just want to go live in India for a few months, but you still want to contribute to an American-based animation company, right? What does that kind of look like for you? I mean, giving all the IT and all the securities, right? All those things are kind of already figured out. And what does it mean for you to, you know, need a workforce to be based in Vancouver when some of them could work in Ohio, right? I think it's adding more nuance to the question, right? Do you have to be location based to count for any of the tax incentives and whatever it is, if the nature of work from home does give you this flexibility to not be so like pin bound for your location?
I'm sure it will continue to evolve as well as technology's changing all the time. And bandwidth had a lot to do with it. And that's relative, I guess. But have you seen visual effects evolve, especially in the last, say, 5 years, and technology-wise?
Yeah. I mean, just with what you all do, right? With kind of teaching people Unreal. I remember back in the day when I used to do more CG than I do now. I was so fed up with all the crashes in Maya that I think I still have the domain. I really hate Maya.com. I'm just, you know, kind of RAM previewing everything was, you know, it was quite a nightmare back in the day. But I think the access points, if anything, to different forms of education content, right, is kind of gets easier every time. Right. You know, just before this one, I was looking at another person's breakdown on Niagara within Unreal and, you know, just kind of spending 20 or 30 minutes in that, that say even 10 years ago, right? Maybe it was behind a paywall and you have to do this, you have to do that. Maybe you have to be enrolled in a course, whatever it is. I'm really excited for, right, our kind of little bubble of visual effects to keep expanding, whatever, right, kind of in other arenas as well. I really admire this one piano performer, and on Instagram recently she posted one of her concerts where, right, the entire concert hall, meaning the ceiling, the floor, and all the walls were kind of LED, right? So and they changed to the rhythm of the music, and I was like, wow, that would be the ultimate concert experience. And then also recently I listened to a presentation by SIGGRAPH, where, you know, they listed USC Institute of Technology and the work that Skip Rizzo is doing over there of using headsets to really help people in terms of therapy for kind of, you know, neurological behaviors. And I thought, like, how amazing it is that we are not only able to enjoy all these mesmerizing, you know, photos and sequences, that it can also be tied into something, you know, that helps our health in a way that's just as interesting, but it's also, you know, beneficial to rewire our thought patterns. So that's what I'm kind of the most excited about. Of I want is, you know, just to kind of keep the art form evolving. So, right, at the end of the day, right, we're exporting sequences, but I would love to see elevated sequences on as many kind of platforms as we can, right? The latest one that's coming to my mind is the Sphere in Vegas. I always love to see, right, oh, who's on the Sphere today, right? And just kind of keep putting our digital work out in other areas that are adjacent to our screens.
Right. So changing formats of delivery, changing technology and tools that are going into creating the content in the first place, just change in the geography of where we're doing it and the economics. And there's a lot of change right now. I know that can be unsettling for people sometimes. Do you have any thoughts on keeping a cool head whilst the world is changing around you?
I think that's the nature of anything that's technology based, and visual effects, right, will always be half technology, right, before the art component can be on top of it. But, you know, going back to the emotion, the emotional components of storytelling, it's really that. It's what blend, right, of serious and, you know, kind of the humorous, and, you know, what blend of different types of lives, especially for communities that may be, you know, historically marginalized, right? Like, what do their own, you know, day-to-day look like? For example, right, I'm a wheelchair user, and the way that I drive a car might be very different than the way that you drive your car, but we still get to A and B just the same. And how can we keep diversifying, right, all the, you know, all your different versions of A and Bs on our screen, right, as we, you know, continue to elevate with our methods of, you know, visual effects, whether it be another kind of software, right, our hardware, it's just going to be kind of keep, you know, exponentially growing on itself. I'm more interested in the people who are using that, right? And there's been a big focus recently on mental health. And I think, you know, especially for visual effects, right, and the animation industry. I think one of the elephants in the room that we don't talk about is, you know, different different mental profiles, right? And, you know, are you someone who is on the spectrum, or are you someone who is neurodistinct, or are you someone who is neurotypical? And every team I have ever worked on is a makeup of so many different nuances of that we are just beginning to talk about, right? I know one of my artists, right, he prefers having notes in written form just so he can have a minute to process it, right? So it's like, oh, then instead of Zoom, then I'll Slack you, whatever it is, right? But it's having those conversations. And sometimes those conversations can turn into really difficult conversations, right? It's like, hey, there might be some times where I do have to give you a no in this format, right? But knowing that I'll try my best to do the written format more than any other, right? And these are things that putting in the time to prioritize the people behind visual effects rather than the software behind visual effects.
That's a very, very important thing to say right there. Bringing the humanity back into it, I think, is something which is echoed through the chat here. Definitely echoed through the community a lot in the last good 10 years at least. Really important. Very important to me personally, particularly neurodiversity and diversity in general. I'd love to hear a little bit about your work with 1in4, and I know that that's something which is near and dear to both of us having organizations that are helping to promote access and upskilling to people who may not have the opportunity as much. But tell us a little bit about 1in4.
Yeah, so 1in4 started during the pandemic. I think after all the uproar of the death of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and all the, you know, kind of conversations that, you know, we were able to partake, you know, online and with each other in person, you know, through, I think just through the collective consciousness and like raising our awareness of, you know, how others might have always, you know, felt left out or, you know, being one of one in any rooms. And I know for myself, right, I think this will be year 16, year 17 of me working on set. And most of the time, I'm still the one-of-one wheelchair user, right? And so the title, 1in4, came from the then 2020 census, which was also echoed in the 2022 census for the United States, that 1 in 4 adults in America do identify as having some sort of disability, whether it's apparent or non-apparent. And we know that depending on right one's own education and awareness, the word disability might be an uncomfortable one to say. So we purposely chose a statistic, right, that I think it's definitely on the rise, right, with the numbers being added by long COVID and so forth. But 1 in 4 or 1 in 4 coalition, as we like to call ourselves, we are made up of working disabled professionals in Hollywood, trying to bring about systemic change in adding the A for access and really asking ourselves who's missing in the room and how can we not only right make your table accessible, but for that metaphor, but also how do you add the A for access so your offices, your sets, you know, whatever products that you're making is, you know, inclusive. So access can really go both ways, right? Not only are you expanding your consumer base, but then in turn, right, you're able to get feedback and hopefully gain invaluable knowledge by the consumer base that you just expanded to. So some of the work that we do first and foremost is language education. Just going back to, visual effects supervising and giving notes. I know one of the notes that I'm just so tired to give now is whenever people use the word handicapped, it's not the good word to use anymore. It is outdated. It's right. And I always, tell my friends, like, I cannot tell you this again. We cannot use this word anymore. Right. So there's tons of other words, to use in its place, including disabled. You can say disabled. It's not a bad word, right? And on our Instagram, 1in4 Coalition, we post a bite-sized language education post once a week to hopefully slowly over time, right, elevate those who are the crafters of stories, to really, rotate out phrases like, what are you blind? Like, yeah, there are blind people in the world. I mean, I wear glasses. I'm partially blind as well with my, prescription at this point. And there are ways of describing an adjective without being harmful to another group, right? And so I think the more that you are able to educate yourself and broaden your field of empathy, right, the better person you'll be. And, those that I worked with that have gone through, some sort of an education or training of this kind is just more, it's a lovelier place. And I think especially for productions, you're just elbow to elbow with someone for 15, 16, 17, 18 hours a day, right? If all the words that they're using are not triggering to you, for 5 or 6 months on end, right? Chances are you'll think, oh, this person was great to work with. Hopefully we'll work with again. But if someone who's a yeller, who keeps using outdated language, right? Who is not being inclusive, who is not prioritizing mental health, who makes a big deal about asking for mental health, day or half a day, whatever, right? I think, those people are slowly, kind of getting their own lessons in a way that you do need to elevate, with the times. So So in addition to language education for 1 and 4, we're also figuring out guidelines, right? And providing guidelines to make sets accessible, to make offices accessible, to make premieres accessible, to make what we might not think of as, visual effects, kind of heavy places, but the places that we go to network, right? Where, maybe you go play, D&D at a friend's house. And if your friend's house is not accessible, then you might be missing out on people that could show up, they couldn't due to the limit of access, right? Whatever that means, just really elevating our imagination to include disabled people in all formats.
Oh, that's great to hear. It's great work. And I really, it's important to us as well, having children myself that are neurodiverse and autistic. It's really important that we understand what these things mean. I think in greater understanding comes greater empathy and the ability to be able to have good conversations around things, I think is super important. I would love to know how we can support you on this mission. Do you have any ways that we can that people can help on the mission of the coalition?
Great question. If any of our posts resonate with you, we would love a share. So we are, not really singing to the choir, but having our language lessons and, other series that we, try to promote as many disabled cast and crew as possible. Everything that we post, we want to expand our audience base as well. And, if you want to give us a follow and share and reshare, we really appreciate that. We are also kind of self-funded as well. And so we appreciate, checking out our website. If you find the resources helpful, right, a donation is always appreciated. If that's, something not possible at this time, we also have 10 ways of how you can add the A for access and ways of self-educating. If you only have 2 hours this month, right, maybe you watch one of the documentaries that we suggest so you can, again, practice empathy, put yourself in someone else's shoes and figure out, right, how do we go about our days? And so, those lists and those resources are on the 1in4coalition.org website.
Amazing. Well, there's lots of ways for, I think, something for everybody there. What are your thoughts on the representation in the arts? That's one place in which so much education happens, I think, is through art. A lot of it can happen through books and textbooks and formal education, but through the arts is often how you can reach more people.
I think whenever you do have the time, it's so important to keep liking, keep sharing, keep commenting on those who have historically been missing in the room, right? Especially the BIPOC community, especially women, right? In the context of visual effects. Something that I've been thinking about heavily recently, I had the great pleasure of kicking off the USC school year by being one of the speakers at Convocation. And this was such a unique experience because I used to work on the audio and visuals team. So I used to film these all the time, right? So I was, a first timer being on the other side of the podium. And as I was looking around, all the audio and visual teams that day, I noticed that the coordinator was a woman and then everyone else was a man. Mm. And this brought me back to something I learned when I started film school in 2007, is that there's not really the male gaze. It's just gaze, because almost everything that we will ever see will be filmed by a man. And how can we disrupt, right, that large set of data so there can be subsets, right? So that doesn't have to be the status quo for the next 50 years, right? What different perspectives can we bring by putting another person behind the camera and if it simply means us, you know, going to a room and just saying, hey, this room is a little too dude heavy. What can we do about that? Right. If one person says it, you know, nothing might come of it. But if 30 people says it, something, right, something might, you know, be shifted. And, you know, so it's really for us to all kind of find our inner voice and our inner bravery to say something about it any time that you can say something about it.
Right. Yeah, being able to have the conversation, boosting the signal, and speaking up. I think sometimes people are afraid to talk about these subjects, often because they don't know how, they don't understand them necessarily, and it feels scary to do it. But being able to welcome people into the conversation, providing forums for it. I feel like having more diversity represented in media as well is a great way of inspiring younger people to understand what's possible, where you can be, where you can end up, and seeing more people with disabilities in movies recently, I think is great. It inspires more people to think that's even possible. That's an important side of it as well, I think, you know, having more representation in things that are seen by more people.
And I think it's okay to say, I don't know, right?
Right.
We're not going to just, you know, even generalists, we're not going to be the one that knows all the in-depth XYZ for everything that's ever, you know, being put in front of us. So hopefully if there's enough of a shorthand or a repertoire for you to exchange project files, right, for you to just grab someone's texture and throw it on the thing that you just, you know, modeled, or if you're, you know, up high enough in the chain and in whatever pipeline you do to chop off a few frames and retime a few other frames. So, you know, kind of, you know, to kind of, you know, kit bash together a completely different feel out of these images that we just created. It's also okay to say, hey, I don't know about this. If you have free time, would you mind downloading some information? Can you provide, you know, can you point me to some resources where I can self-learn? I think these are all valid questions to ask.
That's great. Yeah, that's great advice. Being sometimes I think people probably feel the pressure to have to either know or not say anything, but there is an in between where you can say that you don't know and invite a conversation. Or that's what this is about, really.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with people, whether it's somewhere that something that's important to you or some resource or way of following you, or anything else you'd like to share?
If you'd like to follow me and Alpha Studios or 1 in 4 Coalition, I see that, you know, our handles are being listed in the chat. I just want to say, you know, to everyone in the industry at this time, I feel you, right? For a few months now, I've just been twiddling my thumbs, waiting to go back to, right, to our regularly scheduled programming, if you will. And I know, you know, with kind of, you know, various lives and different, right, and kind of different amount of resources and so forth, this has been such a challenging time. So if you can, take 5 minutes today and reach out to someone and just to see how they're doing. That can go such a long way, right? When you're used to seeing someone for hours on end on one day and then not having seen them for, you know, going on almost a year now, right? And just kind of take that time and, you know, put out some good vibes to the people that you used to work with and check up on each other. And hopefully, you know, we'll all be working kind of from fair contracts, you know, sooner rather than later. But, you know, as we get there, you know, be sure we are taking care of each other in the process.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Caitlin, for being with us on the podcast today. It's been a real pleasure talking about your life and your work and your experience, and just, yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you, everyone, for listening in. I appreciate you.
You bet. Well, thank you also to everybody who was, I think we got to everybody's questions. I guess we've got one more, if you have a second. We have one
more. Let's go for it.
The audience. So someone's asking, what does it mean to be an entrepreneur in the VFX industry right now? Is it even sustainable in terms of a workable business model? They also say they love the 1 in 4 community.
Amazing. Ooh, this is a tough question to end on. Something that my accountant told me years ago, and you know, it didn't click right then and there. But you know, he said to me, success is different for everyone, right? Mm. And to him, success now is being able to work at his home office so he can spend time with his kids without having to spend hours on the commute, right? That's something that's important for him, right? For me, is to have enough intricate and relevant and interesting work, right? So all the artists and crew at Alpha Studios can keep developing their craft. To others, it might be working on the next Marvel, right? Or the next blockbuster, however it is. So, you know, whatever it is, I think that, you know, is a route of figuring out if you are able to have a business model that's sustainable, right? Are you looking to work full time from your business? Do you have enough business acumen to, you know, wear the producer's hat when you need to, and, you know, develop one-on-one relationship with clients, you know, to have enough clientele for there to be a word of mouth, you know, for the services that you offer? Are you willing to travel abroad, right? There are tons of jobs that are going on right now abroad that, you know, it's you know, it has been an interesting back and forth conversation. Are you interested in working on, you know, a content for the streamers, or are you interested in any other platforms? I know tons of, you know, friends who started on the early days of YouTube when, right, you know, no one kind of knew what that platform will evolve to. And now, you know, it has been their full-time job for years. If you are coming from the artist side, are you willing to learn business accounting, right? Are you willing to learn negotiation skills? And, you know, again, shout out to my business accountant. I think after I finished business accounting, I sent him a lovely bottle of wine and just asked him to never leave me, because my mind is not designed for that. I see the bigger picture, I understand it, but I do not want to be, you know, in the nitty-gritty Excels all day, right? Of, you know, knowing enough to kind of, you know there's more to learn, but also know enough to know that, you know, these areas, you know, continue to be my areas of strength. And can I find others, you know, who my weaknesses are also their areas of strength, right? And you're right, how creative do you, you know, can you push yourself in developing a brand, right? Figuring out the creative partners to work with, right? Do you have enough clientele that, you know, you're able to, you know, kind of gain work right away for your business? I know back in the day when Alpha Studios started in 2013, one of my classmates, Freddie Wong, he just started his popular web series, Video Game High School, on YouTube. And this was the launch of YouTube Red, right? And that was the first kind of big, you know, work that we were able to bring in through Alpha Studios. And then just kind of over, you know, word of mouth, right? We were able to work with tons of YouTubers who then were able to let series on other streaming platforms, you know, and so forth. And that was, you know, one of the revenues that helped us, you know, grow in so many ways. And that was, you know, definitely, you know, being in the right place at the right time and, you know, kind of, you know, knowing enough of the business, you know, kind of aspect to, you know, ask the studios, oh, are you interested in packaging this show with this show in terms of post-production services? You know, what other, you know, post-production vendors are you working with, right? We would like to be a creative partners in this way. These are the services that we offer. And, you know, kind of find your niche. I think one of my strengths, hopefully, to this day is finding the shortest A and B path, right? It's like, I see where you are. I can see the end result in my head. We have 6 hours to get there. What is the fastest way to get there? And, you know, and still, you know, have everyone keep their sanity and not push everyone, you know, to the brink of extreme. And so I think based on how you answer all these questions, you can, you know, come to your own conclusion, right? Is the entrepreneurship, is that a good route for you, right? Is starting a studio, the right route for you? Or is it looking for, you know, a freelance or permalance, right? Or a full-time job at somewhere else, you know, that have all these groundwork, you know, kind of laid out in place.
Wow. Yeah, well, what a, I'm glad I asked the question now. I was about to end, but I'm super glad I asked the question. There was a ton in that. And yeah, I mean, really, really, so, there's so much to unpack. I think we're going to have you back on another podcast and just talk about that, because there's, wow, so much there. And I know that you did an MBA along the way and you've learned a lot about business, and that's not something which is necessarily for everybody. There's lots of people who want to just do the art and stay on the box and be that, and that's fine, right? It's what you're saying is, what I heard is that it's very personal, it's very unique to the individual. And yes, there are opportunities, and yes, you can make it work, but it's not going to be the same for any one person. It's going to be a very unique journey.
Yeah, it's a unique journey. And I think, you know, for whatever reason, you know, learning the aspects of, right, negotiation, it sparks the same amount of joy in my mind as learning a new particle simulator, right? I think right. Somehow they're connected in my mind, and you know, hopefully it makes sense for me, and, you know, maybe, you know, not too many others, but I think just, you know, figuring out a good ways of communication. In my mind, every problem is a communication problem. And before we can get into the visuals, you're just talking most of the time via email, via previs, via, you know, storyboards, you know, sometimes just lines on the page, sometimes just pulling up Google images and try to, you know, kind of kitbash some ideas together. And so the more tools that you have for communication in whatever industry you go to, right, that's just going to put you eons ahead.
That's very, very well put. It's all problem solving, ultimately. Like the same things that can help you write good code will help you make a good image if you approach it as a problem to solve. That's fascinating, and the way that you input into that, really, really fascinating. I'm sorry to keep you on for a little longer on the podcast, but I'm also not sorry, because I think that was a hugely valuable way to end and asking a challenging question, but I appreciate your answer. Thank you for being real about these times that we're in and being open and real about it. I think that's what helps us move through challenging times, and I appreciate you for being here again. I'll say it again. Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for everyone asking all these great questions. You kept me on my toes for this podcast. Thank you, Jackie, for working behind the scenes and putting all the amazing key takeaways in the chat. And yeah, let's do another one of these chats soon.
I look forward to it. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack that I can see the responses to. Thank you all for participating, and the people mentioning being inspired and wanting to create their own work based on wanting to see more of who they are in the space. And I appreciate it. I'm terrible at goodbyes, so I'll just say au revoir and look forward to next time.
Terrible goodbyes as well. So until next time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Caitlin. Thank you to our audience. Thank you for being here. Thank you for asking great questions. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks with another episode. You can follow us as a school at becomecgpro.com and in our free Facebook group. But yeah, go out there and make some cool art. And we hope you're all back to work soon. Take care of yourselves in the meantime.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.